Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. Of course, I am Benjamin R. Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, we've talked a lot about Greatest Gen Con 2017 on the show.
Yeah.
I feel like it's time to formulate a plan, and I thought maybe we could do that a little bit out in public so people can see the thought process. What do you think?
You want them to see behind the pod, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to lift up my pod's skirt and show them what's underneath.
Well, I almost exclusively record while wearing a kimono, so it's only right that I open that up a little bit.
Yeah, that's great, because I'm wearing a gi, and I feel like we're kind of on theme. That's great.
Yeah.
So, I feel like we started thinking about Greatest Gen Con before we really understood the constraints, and you actually have had a conversation with somebody who has some expertise in this kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I'm friends with someone who helps facilitate Emerald City Comic Con, and so I had a pretty deep conversation with her about what we wanted to do. How we wanted to do it, we've spent a lot of time brainstorming what we would like a Greatest Gen Con 2017 to be, and then you and I had a conversation about that conversation.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that the thing that I got from your reporting back is that we basically can't get away with a con where we are doing something that might arouse the suspicion of a legal department.
Right, because here's what I was able to glean from this conversation. It's that, you know, it's one thing to go out and do a live show, and it is quite another to do an exhibition. An exhibition wherein we would use property as a way to sell tickets, and by property,
right,
I mean intellectual property, exhibit either in part or parcel movies and television programming based on those properties, and also getting actors to appear at a con is also an expense that I was shocked to hear about. The realities of getting even, and I don't want to be specific about who we would like to bring, but basically it doesn't matter how low on the cast list you go, it is five figures to get any actor to show up to a con at all.
So like even somebody that signed one of my Star Trek trading cards?
They would probably be on the higher end of that. Like, it
wow.
is. So I went into this conversation very excited and very hopeful at our chances of putting something together for our very excited viewers, and I came away sort of crushed by it, because she was like, look, I love you guys and I want you to do it, but but here's what you're dealing with if you decide to go down this road. And this was like not just the things that I'm telling you, but a list of things that were not insurmountable, not impossible to deal with, but TBH, like, made it an administrative challenge that made it seem far less fun than the idea of getting the gang together for some fun group hangs, riffing on Trek, and hitting a Remick pinata together, you know? like it's,
well, that's
so,
the thing. Like,
it's,
I think
not like
the...
I went into it all doe-eyed thinking it was going to be easy, but I did not think it was going to be this difficult to put together. And it's not like I wasn't ready to work hard to make this happen. I don't want to make it seem like that at all. It seemed like, for a variety of legal and expense reasons, I don't know if we can do it the way that we were hoping to.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I think the original idea of Greatest Gen Con was Ben and Adam in the La Quinta in Victorville.
Yeah.
And if other people were there also, that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Whereas in at some point, like, we started thinking, like, what if it was a real con? And I think that maybe us thinking, what if it was a real con and not just us connecting on a very human level with the people that that watched our show and are the reason we keep doing it, maybe that was us getting off track. Like, maybe what we should do is get back to our roots, like, literally, like, go on fucking Expedia or something right now and book a couple of nights in Victorville for the two of us and just tell people when we're going to be there.
I love the idea that Victorville has become canonical Greatest Gen, you know?
Yeah, it totally has.
It's where the show was born in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, the other weird place that the show was kind of born was New London, New Hampshire, which is where I was for many of our early episodes. What do you think of that? What do you think of just, like, pulling a date out of thin air, making it our business to be there for a few nights, and just say, like, hey, like, we're gonna hang out. Like, maybe we go so far as to, like, book a venue nearby and have a live show there, but, like, mainly it's just putting some zinc oxide on our noses and hanging out poolside and just, like, being there and hoping other people come.
Yeah, like, maybe we pivot into Greatest Gencation.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just chill hangs. Chill
it's
hangs.
Just chill hangs.
Chill hangs, a live show.
We're not violating anybody's copyrights.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Like, I'm of two minds on this. I am very focused on incorporating con-like attributes to our tour dates that we are putting together in the Midwest and the East Coast. Like,
con-like attributes, but not so much that we would get sued.
Right. And neither legal nor Botany Bay type risks involved in these attributes. Yeah. So,
for,
like,
the record, you won't be able to buy tickets to any of this on eBay.
Right. Right. So, like, there's the idea of sort of folding some of the ideas that we've received from viewers into tour dates, and also sort of creating a one-off to pay off this running joke that we handcuffed ourselves to in season one, right? Like we got to pay this off. We got to do it somehow.
We got to. It would be criminal for us not to do it.
So part of this conversation is to manage expectations about what a one-off event would be for us, which I think is smart. And the other thing I think is to narrow down what that would be, correct?
Right. What do you think of this, Adam? We're getting a little long here in our marin, but I think we've kind of formulated the outlines of a plan that I really like, because it's us kind of getting back to our roots, doing the Greatest Gen Con that we first ever imagined, and maybe we'll make it a thing where we raise a little money for charity or something.
Yeah.
But it's not us like getting some huge con together that would necessitate us having a legal department and a ton of, you know, just a war chest of money that would make it prohibitive and unfun to do.
Yeah, I mean, because we definitely want this to be fun, first and foremost. I love the idea that getting back to our roots is code for doing the minimum. I'm down.
Well, what do you say we get on to the episode we came here to talk about, Adam?
Let's do it, Ben. It's one of the greats. It's season 6, episode 10, Ronnie Cox, part 1.
That Ronnie Cox, though.
This is a Ronnie Cox tour de force.
It sure is, Adam.
And, like, you know, so many people, when they think of Chain of Command, they only think of the four lights. They think of part 2. But what you lose when you think of the four lights is a really great part 1 of a two-parter.
It is sizzling how good this part 1 is.
I think it's all on Ronnie Cox's shoulders, too. If this part is miscast, I think the whole house comes down.
The entrepreneur meets up with a hood-class starship known as the USS Cairo, and Admiral Nachayev comes on board and is kicking shit from the second she's on.
I'm afraid there's no time for the usual pleasantries. I'm here to relieve you of command of the Enterprise.
You can tell she's a badass because she walks around without a communicator. She's like the person who leaves home without a cell phone. She's like,
yeah.
Anyone who wants to talk to me can just walk right up to me. Like, I don't give any fucks.
Yeah, like the president definitely doesn't have a set of keys in his pocket, you know?
Right, yeah. This is a totally different level of admiralty that Nachayev is.
Right, and she comes on board and basically just unceremoniously tells Picard that he is being reassigned. He is no longer captain of the Enterprise, effective essentially immediately.
This is a 40-second cold open, Ben. Do you know how long the theme song is of the show? It's a minute and 40.
This is the cold open equivalent of a kick to the nuts.
It was awesome. So great. And basically everyone is doing Riker Eyes to theme. They basically do like Californians to theme.
It's 30 seconds of cold open, 10 seconds of Riker Eyes theme.
It's the perfect open.
It's amazing.
Californians.
So we come back from theme, and what is announced is that Picard has been reassigned. It's like it's a McLaughlin group.
Issue 1.
Where Admiral Nachayev has the kind of remnants of the senior staff together, and she's explaining to them that Picard, Beverly, and Worf have been reassigned to something that is a secret. And instead of Will getting the chair pulled out for him as he deserves, Starfleet Command has reassigned Captain Jellicoe of the Cairo to take over as captain of the Entrepreneur. And the reason is that Jellicoe is a grizzled veteran of dealing with Cardassians, and there's some Cardassian business that they need to take care of.
This is an element of like the body politic that I've advocated for a long time. It's like, where's the grizzled admiral or the captain that's been in the shit? Like, I want to know more about that guy. I want to see that guy on the show, and here he is.
Right, and you don't want it to be the captain that has gone cuckoo about the Cardassians and is off, you know, AWOL firing torpedoes at them. Like, you want the one that kept his wits about him and is the guy that Starfleet confidently turns to when there's some Cardassian shit afoot.
The episode does a great job in taking away, but not taking away entirely, like Picard has been relieved of his command. Beverly and Worf are on this mission, and yet they're still on the ship. They're like ghosts. So when Jellicoe gets command of the Enterprise, like it's like a breakup where you still see the person, and that makes it that much more difficult.
Yeah, it's like you're broken up, but you're still roommates kind of a deal.
Yeah, and that just like heightens the tension. It maintains the tension in a way that's just so effective.
Yeah, there's a great scene in 10 Forward where, you know, Picard and Jellicoe are standing there and Riker, you know, reports something to Jellicoe. And Jellicoe has come onto this ship with a very different command style to Picard. And he is just, he's a no-nonsense, no-time-for-backup guy. He has a different way he likes things organized.
We have a standard 3-shift rotation.
I'd like to change that to 4 starting tonight.
Different way he likes things set up.
I want you to install a bypass between the main phaser array and the secondary generators.
Like, he wants the ship rigged for battle, and that means, like, everybody's going to be busting their ass around the clock for 2 days straight.
Get it done.
In anticipation of meeting up with the Cardassians. And Riker is like, this fucking sucks. Like, this should have been my job, A. And B, why is he being such a dick about everything? I'm not used to this.
It's not necessary to give Captain Jellicoe command of the Enterprise just to conduct a negotiation.
You talked about it for a moment, but, like, the idea that command is given to anyone else besides Riker in this moment is shattering. You can see it on Frakes' face. You can see it, like, Nechayev almost relishes the idea of kicking him in the balls in that moment. And it's like...
And I want someone on the bridge who has a great deal of experience with the Cardassians.
That's not you, bub.
Yeah.
It's just brutal. And there's something about, like... There's, like, a reverence for the D, right? Like we love this ship. Like, the actual ship is what I'm talking about.
Right.
And when... You see someone else as its captain besides someone that you know and love, it just feels wrong. It's like someone else driving your car or something. Like, there's something gross about it. And it's...
Jellicoe has adjusted the driver's seat and done the mirrors in a weird way.
He's like, changed all the radio stations. Like, it's really affecting in a way that I wasn't quite expecting.
The way that Ronnie Cox, who is portraying Jellicoe, characterizes this captain is great, because he is this archetype of the military commander who is not really concerned with the morale of his underlings. Like, he is Gene Hackman in Crimson Tide getting on the radio going, it has been reported to me that there's a problem with morale.
Yeah.
Shape up, assholes!
Yeah. And Ronnie Cox is a great enough actor that he's really playing in the margins of his character a lot, which is so satisfying as a viewer to watch. Like, his posture is... Like, he's a tall man. He's almost as tall as Riker, and yet he's got a little bit of a slouch to him. Like, he walks... with like sort of a forward carriage, a forward momentum that's really speedy and fast. You see this when he walks around with Data from station to station, like snapping his fingers and making shit happen.
Get it done.
He does it the second he gets off the transporter pad. Like, he essentially like falls forward off the transporter pad because he's already in motion. And
yeah.
He marches Riker down the hallway going like, what's the shift rotation? 3? It's going to be 4 now. What's, you know, like...
Yeah.
Like, get reports to me on all the crew. Like, I want every section chief to give a readiness report. I want it tonight. Like, this is happening.
Yeah, he also maintains eye contact, like, the entire time. He's never looking around. He's, like, razor-focused. And he's also real fidgety, like, with his hands. So there's, like, a conflict between what you're seeing through his eyes and what he's doing with his body, which I think is paid off a little bit later. Like, you get the sense that in tone of voice, he's very authoritative, but everything else sort of makes you question if he's all hat and no cattle, you know?
Yeah. It really chafes against people. Like, the crew of the Entrepreneur are the best and the brightest, and they really don't like being put in this position where all of their expectations have been upset and their, you know, competence is being re-examined, and the kind of esteem that they have with the captain has gone out the window, and there's no understanding between them and their superior.
And as the XO, it really falls on Riker. Like, all of the complaints are funneled towards him. And unfortunately, he's the worst conduit to elevate any of these issues, because he and Jellicoe have gotten off on such a bad footing already, because Jellicoe requests a four-shift rotation, and Riker sort of drags his feet on that. And
yeah.
And Jellicoe, like, grabs him by the collar and, like, throws him out the door on it. He's like, I made a request. What the fuck is your problem? Like, get it done.
It is a strange... Like, I think of Riker as being such a company man. It's kind of surprising that he doesn't, like, jump on these orders. Like, he really does attempt to push back, which is a major misfire on his part.
Angelico's not wrong either. Like, his way about it could maybe use some sanding off of some corners. But, like, none of his orders seem strange. And, you know, when he does he goes station to station with Data, which I think is just, like, a great decision by Jellicoe, because he gets the straight dope from Data in every moment. Like, he'll go up to Geordi and he'll be like, we gotta recalibrate this thing. What's it gonna take? And Geordi's like, well, geez, it's gonna take two straight shifts around the clock. And Data's like, yes, that's actually possible, though, if you work 48 hours straight. And Jellicoe's like, great, get it done. Yeah. It's almost like Data...
If Geordi could make eyes at Data, he would be, though.
Yeah, yeah. And so Data is a great guy on the side for Jellicoe as he goes around the ship, because he is getting the expected pushback from the crew, but getting the straight honesty from Data in all of those interactions, which sort of makes Data's honesty a little hostile.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that which longer nurses the disease.
Well, meanwhile, the captain, the doctor, and Worf are doing some training in the holodeck. They've put on their skin-tight black jumpsuits, and they're running around in these blue styrofoam caves. And it's like, it's all timing and rigging booby traps and shooting Cardassians.
It's the best they can do? No, sir, but that's what they did.
And they're training for something, but only Picard knows any of the details of what they're training for.
It would be helpful to know something about our mission.
I think Jellicoe maybe has some information as well, because they kind of, like, have a couple of hushed conversations with each other.
Yeah.
Like, Picard's pretty confident in the decision that Starfleet Command has made. He falls into his new role much easier than Riker does.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that they don't trust Worf and the Doctor enough to fill them in on what they're doing just yet.
There's a physicality to their training that seems very unexpected. You know, you would expect Secret Mission to be a little more spycraft and a little less sweaty, I guess. But, like, there's a practice session where Picard comes back to his quarters and he is, like, just drenched and spent in a way that you rarely see any officer on board. Like, they are working these people.
It's an interesting choice. I mean, like, you think of, like, Navy SEALs or whatever, and they kind of exist at a state of readiness. You know, they're not like letting themselves go between missions. Like, they're ready to be at any point on the planet in 20 hours and, you know, amphibiously assault a enemy prison complex or whatever. And this is not that, right? Like, Worf can kind of claim some readiness. Like, he does yoga every day, but but, like, Picard and Beverly are basically being asked to be, like, elite black ops soldiers, and they're a big ask, and they were working their asses off to get ready, but they only have 2 days, and I was a little worried in the run up to this. Like, are they going to just be so wrung out at the end of training around the clock for 2 days that by the time the actual mission starts, they're just going to be, like, totally spent?
It's interesting to me that they trained themselves. Like, this is a moment in a story where you could almost expect the drill sergeant type figure who's got to get the crew ready fast, and there's not enough time for any bullshit.
He doesn't even have enough time to poke out their eyes and skull fuck them at him.
Who the fuck said that?
Right, and what you get instead, like, you can only get one of those, and that guy is Jellicoe, and he's in the B story. Or yeah. I guess the co-A story.
Well, Picard, Worf, and Beverly pile into a Previa, and they take off, and now that they are departed from the ship, Picard gives a little exposition about what's up, and it turns out the Federation suspects that the Cardassians are working on a weapon of mass destruction that they can send over subspace to, like, eat all life on a planet and leave it available for the Cardassians to take over. What's it called? A biogenic weapon?
Yeah, they call it a metagenic weapon.
Oh, metagenic weapon.
Oh, my God.
I am not familiar with metagenics.
And the idea that this could be sent via subspace, like almost like a radio signal, is sort of terrifying. Like,
yeah.
Like the idea of a ghost planet being ready for the takeover after like a month is crazy to me.
Like, I wondered if a planet would have the same atmosphere after a month if like all the plant life was killed off and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, does that immediately change the way a planet's atmosphere works, or does that take a while to switch over? Like, would the Cardassians then have to show up with like a Ace Garden Center worth of plants to bring down to the surface?
Now, when you're replanting a yacht, you're gonna want to dig a hole for these plants, a good 6 to 8 inches around the bulb.
We've used a blend of grass seeds, primarily Kentucky bluegrass, but we've pulled up a lot of the crabgrass that was here before.
Now you want to make sure that you purchase a high-quality grass seed mix with a good portion of fescue, Kentucky rye. What's another one?
This almost merits research, Adam.
Yeah, no, we can't do it.
Spread the seed evenly, and then you... I actually watched this old house about redoing the grass in
yeah.
your yard.
I think someone sent that in.
Yeah.
I watched that too. It was great.
We should have watched it more recently.
Yeah.
But that would count as research, I think, technically.
Can't do it.
Can't do it. I feel like we may be leaning on the charity of our viewers too much, though. Like,
yeah.
Or like... like, we can't do research to the extent that one of our most beloved running jokes is not going to work this time.
That's terrible. Well, I think it's a little bit forgivable that I couldn't think of a third type of grass. I'm hoping that I'm forgiven for that.
Fingers crossed, Adam.
Yeah. Ben, the thing about the Cardassians is that, like... Is this in character for them? Like, is there anything that we know about them at this point that makes it seem like they would be down for planet-wide genocide? Like, down for, like, what is their end game with a weapon like this? Like, do they want to take over whole systems? Are they going for, like, a galaxy-wide land grab? Like, what's their deal?
I mean, I have to think, and I think that maybe they could have had like one line of dialogue to clear this up. I have to think that you have a weapon like this and you don't use it, but the threat of its existence is enough to get more at the bargaining table. And this is kind of like what the Cardassians are up to in this episode outside of this is sort of contemporary, right? Like they're saying... Like, the Cardassians want to take over a specific planet mm-hmm. that fell on the Federation side of the line after the war, and they're betting that the Federation isn't going to have the resolve to heat the war back up if they just take the one. And that's basic, like, Putin annexed Crimea, you know?
Yeah.
Relax, I got this.
Like, it's kind of like we kind of have examples of that being a thing in real life, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that like the U.S. or the or NATO or whatever should have started a shooting war with Russia because of Crimea. Like, I don't really know. Like, I am a fucking idiot when it comes to that stuff. But
this may not be the podcast to do a deep dive on those issues.
Right. But like, it is really upsetting that that happened just on a like, you know, there's something about an international border that seems to be like an inviolable thing.
Yeah, like, it's sacrosanct.
Yeah, and the fact that happened and there was no real way to deal with it aside from shooting, and therefore nothing was done really, is really upsetting and weird, and that makes the Cardassians a kind of tangibly scary adversary. And you know, the idea that they're developing this weapon of mass destruction is also really scary. So I don't fault the Federation for taking that threat super seriously.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
What is also upsetting is how little intelligence they have to go on before sending three of the most important characters on the show behind enemy lines. There's a moment before Picard leaves the ship, like the last moment before he leaves the ship, where he meets with Jellicoe, and Jellicoe's like, well, he basically gives like the Colin Powell weapons of mass destruction presentation, where he's like, look, all we know is there's yellow cake, there's aluminum tubes, and there's launchers out there. Like, here's a PowerPoint presentation. Hope you don't get killed. Good luck. And like, that's all they have to go on. It seems incredibly flimsy, and it makes the mission so much more fraught. Like, what are they doing it for? It seems like Picard is a real company man about it.
Yeah,
we expect a certain amount of questioning from Picard when it comes to matters of the Prime Directive, for instance. But in this case,
of things the Admiralty is telling him that seem crazy.
Yeah, and in this case, it's buttoned up. The ship isn't his. He's going on this mission because Nechayev ordered him to. Like, he is company man Picard here.
Yeah, and well, I think he is around long enough to see that Jellicoe is a really different command swagger than he does. I think that he and Jellicoe really respect each other.
Yeah, there's sort of like, it's Captain's Club, isn't it?
Yeah, Captain Game recognize Captain Game.
Yeah.
So while the shuttle team is en route to this Cardassian planet where this terrifying weapon is being developed, the new captain of the Entrepreneur is getting ready to meet up with a Cardassian gull who is going to, like, they're going to, like, negotiate what's going on with this planet that the Cardassians are sort of flexing at.
So we're told, right, that the whole reason that Jellicoe has been installed on this mission is that he's like, he's got these reps with the Cardassians at the diplomatic table, you know? Like,
right, he had something to do with the armistice, maybe?
Yeah, he knows how to handle them. He knows all their secrets. And so
he could play poker with them, you know?
Yeah.
He knows their tells.
So, like, we get an idea of his reputation that then is completely, like, his pants are pulled down almost immediately. Like, he's playing all these games with, like, you know, keep the guy waiting style power move games, which is just, like, irritating, right?
Yeah, like, he walks up to the gull and he goes in for a handshake and he pulls the guy in and pushes him back.
He ratchets up his seat a little taller than the gull, like to make it seem like he's taller.
It's a pretty weak tea, man.
It's all weak tea.
I'm gonna keep an eye on it for you guys.
All these stupid mind games, like, fuck, man, that's not being a great diplomat. That's being a joker. There's no there.
We get terrible deals with the Cardassians, and I'm going to go in. I'm going to be the captain of the Enterprise. I'm going to get the best deals. Believe me, you're going to love the deals that I get with them.
I was in there with the gull. We were having the most beautiful chocolate cake. And I got them to stop using the metagenic weapon.
I asked him if he wanted to come down to Mar-a-Lago, play the back nine with me this weekend. It's going to cost the taxpayers $3 million. I think it's very worth it. Believe me.
I had a 10-minute conversation with Admiral Nechev, and turns out diplomacy with the Cardassians far more difficult than I thought. It's not so easy.
Yeah, and the Cardassians have more intelligence than Jellicoe is expecting.
It is shocking. You know, like, it's, they sort of rule of threes this, right? They do the Jellicoe hour late thing.
What is going on? I've been waiting here for over
an hour.
I'm Captain
Jellicoe.
They do the not ready to negotiate, walk away from the table thing.
If the Cardassian Union truly wishes to discuss peace, they can send someone who can negotiate in a civilized manner.
They do the sit at the very end of the table while taking the gull seat away thing.
I did not agree to allow others into this meeting.
Until finally the gull is like, hey, I noticed Captain Picard isn't here.
It would be a shame if something were to happen to such a noted officer.
And he basically tells him, I know exactly what you're doing. They're in great danger. Like, he totally flips the table around on him and calls for a break in the meeting. And it's at this moment where you know everything's fucked. Like, there's no recovering from this.
Right, and it shatters Jellicoe's game. Like, Jellicoe has nothing to say after this, but, like, there's 10 minutes of episode left.
Yeah, yeah. It shatters what little game he had at all. I wish Jellicoe was a little more competent at this. I wish we actually got to see good, hard negotiation here, and to have that turn back around on him. Like, what if Jellicoe were right in his diplomacy, like, in some way, and we got a different version of this scene where he had some counterfactuals and he was deft and good and skilled instead of, like, just sloppy and blustery and stupid. Like, that would almost make the gull's table flipping even more terrifying, that he would stare down the face of a great diplomat and still get one over on him. But it doesn't make the gull look, I mean, the gull is still extremely threatening, and the moment he confides that he knows the secret plan, it's scary and troubling. But I wonder if it plays any differently if he's across the table from a more skilled diplomat.
I think that this must have been an economy of script issue, because, you know, they could have gone back and forth three more times, but it would have made the scene a lot longer.
Yeah.
I totally agree, though. Like, and they've achieved this before with the Romulans, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The Romulans have out-chessed them in the past, and it's been devastating and exciting to watch. And this is devastating more that, like, the Federation had it so wrong so early, you know? When you get into a Romulan situation, you know you're playing chess already, and I think the Federation thought they were coming to a game of checkers.
I can think of very few times where the Federation is on the winning side of that kind of intelligence.
I know.
You know? Like so often, they're not getting this shit right. And it makes for more interesting storytelling, I think. Yeah. Like, I think that's the right side to write it. But you know, for being the good guys, they are not also the smart guys.
I was thinking if we ever got our chance to write a season of Star Trek on a show that wasn't as obviously doomed as Discovery.
Yeah.
The opportunity to write a Star Trek spy story, Who are the intelligence officers that are getting this, like, that play in the margins, that do the dirty tricks, would be a whole lot of fun. Like, it would be a lot of fun to tell the story about the kind of the part of Starfleet that does morally ambiguous things when Starfleet is such an outwardly moral entity.
Yeah, like, turn it 7 clicks back from what Star Trek Into Darkness did. You know?
Yeah. Right.
Like, like spin the wheel back from that a couple of times and get, like you say, in the margins, not all the way dark,
right?
But like tough decisions have to be made by tough people.
Right. Yeah, not we're building an evil enterprise.
You can tell it's evil because it's black. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Darth Enterprise, voiced by James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
Picard, Worf, and Crusher are in the black leotards. These black leotards are sort of a matte finish. Like, part of the reason they got out of the season one and two uniforms was that they were too form-fitting. I think it's interesting that in season six, they stick them right back into a skin tight.
Yeah.
And all you're seeing is face. Like, they do a really interesting lighting trick here. They stick them in some caves. They only light the faces. You're not seeing a lot of bulge.
It's largely bulgeless. It's kind of the ninja costume of Starfleet.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're slinking around these caves. It's essentially like a rock scrambling and rappelling episode from here on in.
And they really got the simulation right. It almost looks exactly like what they practiced for, right down to the color of the rocks.
Yeah, they get to this door in the caves, and it's like an access hatch to the secret underground lair where the Cardassians are surely developing this terrifying weapon. And they like jimmy the lock and they open it up, and there's just like one weird Star Trek TOS computer sitting in the middle of an empty room.
It's just like a silver paper shredder. Just slowly whirring away on some documents.
And they're like, well, this was a trick. This was no good. And
yeah, they're expecting a lab.
Yeah, so Picard sees the writing on the wall and is like, let's get the fuck out of here. But he is too late, and the Cardassians start running in and shooting purple laser beams at them. And it's a pretty tense scene, but it's not, I feel like the, like when you're doing an action scene, you really want to establish the kind of parameters of a space. So, you know, like where somebody could run and duck.
Yeah.
If they wanted to dodge something, and like what the points of egress and ingress are, so you know where the bad guys are coming from and where the heroes are going to try to escape to. And I feel like anytime they need a hole for more Cardassians to come out of, they just have it magically. Like, yeah, they haven't really set this up at all. So it's a pretty unfair fight for that reason. Worf and Beverly managed to get through the door, but at the cost of the captain getting grabbed, and Worf takes like a phaser before he can run back in, and the door like slams shut behind him.
Worf puts up a good fight, but the door wins again. You know?
Isn't it always like that, Adam? That's sort of one of the sort of Aristotelian tropes that this show always returns to, is that Klingons and doors are not good friends.
Worf is sort of like the Janellan to the door of the Dyson Sphere. He uses himself to hold it open.
Yeah. Dr. Crusher manages to turn herself 90 degrees and fly through.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the Cardassians close in on a now isolated Picard. Picard drops his dustbuster, knowing it's over.
Yeah.
It's got to be terrifying.
That is
on the other side of the feeling. On the other side of the door, Worf and Beverly are like, we got to go back. Worf is like, we got to go back in there. And Beverly's like, I mean, she's right, right? Like, when you know you're that outnumbered, you have to retreat, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's nowhere to go.
I think the case that she's making without making it fully is that the only chance of rescuing Picard is escaping the planet and giving word that he's been captured. To remain and attempt to rescue him now would only mean dying, and then no one would know where they are or how to rescue them.
Yeah. This is a thing that they are dealing with constantly on this show, is like one of the main people is in a compromised situation. What do we do? And turn tail and run is not an option they select all that often.
Yeah. So,
it feels really crazy that they do it.
In some seasons, I feel like you would get a line of dialogue out of Worf where he would rather die than leave a warrior behind. And this doesn't feel quite right for his character to listen to Beverly, of all people, so easily about this. But also, he's been wounded, and shit is coming down on them super fast. So, I mean, I guess in the moment, I can understand it.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like this would have been... Like, this is where the person writing draft one of this script realizes, like, it just doesn't make sense for Picard to be there with the Doctor and Worf. Like, we need a Black Ops team that is people that are specially trained for this, and maybe, like, write it so that they wind up not trusting Picard that much, and they make an understandable decision to ditch. Or they go down in, like, a hail of phaser fire doing what maybe Worf should have done. But, you know, they can't kill off Worf, right?
I think what we're running into here is like, we're running out of runway, like we do on episodes of this kind. Like, I'm going to advocate for a three-parter here again. Like, because it would bulk up this moment in the way that you're saying, but also, like, we skip over the entire ride to the planet that they have to hitch with the Ferengi.
Right.
And, like, how do they get dropped off on the planet? Is there a getaway car waiting for them that they're supposed to beam back up to? Like,
right. Yeah, how are they going to get back?
There's all of this connective tissue on the story that's missing that serves the story.
It is sort of implied by Jellicoe that this is a suicide mission, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, he says, he, like, looks Picard in the eye and goes, like, you're probably not coming back from this one.
That's so fucked.
Yeah. Well, the final scene of the episode is on the Death Star, and they walk Picard into the antechamber of the Emperor's throne room or whatever, and there is this Cardassian sitting there, and Picard is in, like, he's in, like, his jumpsuit and handcuffs, and this British Cardassian stands up and explains to Picard that he's going to be a very interesting challenge.
Yeah, it's going to be some real Brit on Brit, isn't it?
Sure is.
They probably both like the same tea, huh?
You think that that this guy is from the London of Cardassia?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's a sort of evil that, like, the evilest kind of evil is the kind that isn't showy about it, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Nothing could be cooler than this Gull in this moment, because he is so almost kind, almost, a matter-of-factly threatening with Picard's life. He's like, look, buddy, I'm going to ask the questions around here, or I'm going to kill you. Like, if he were talking about any... If you didn't know what language he was speaking, you would think they were just talking about lunch, you know?
Yeah.
Fascinating tease, and then smash to be continued.
It's one of the smashiest smashes of to be continued they've ever done.
Yeah. Yeah. Mid-season, to be continued. Fun times.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
One of the best, Ben. I can't say that it's not on my mountain. It was enjoyable tip to tail. I mean, for it had issues, and those issues were ones that we talked about, but none of them were enough to make it a bad episode. They were just choices.
I agree. I think that generally speaking, this is a pretty terrific hour of television. Not without concerns, and I think that, you know, some of that is just like the constraints of making television, but it's pretty great. It is an amazing tone shift from the quality of life episode that we just watched.
Boy, it really is. There's some tonal whiplash for sure. This episode is really all about trust to me. It's the amount of trust that Picard has for the machine that he's inside, the amount of trust that an Enterprise crew will give any captain who commands them. You know, it's how much of that is earned versus how much of that is just connoted through a position. You know, the amount of trust that everyone has to show Nechayev for being the quarterback on this mission.
Right.
And the amount of trust that maybe she may or may not have in herself, because there's that scene towards the end where she sends the coded message to Jellicoe and she's like, "How's it going?" And and Jellicoe's like, "How's it going?" And Nechayev is like, "I don't know." Jellicoe's like, "Well, we lost the transmission, so I think we'll have an answer one way or the other pretty soon." And they just like, they so clearly do not have a grasp on the situation at all.
They have a gut sense that everything is fucked, but they don't know enough to know how fucked it is.
Yeah, the restraint on either the writer's side or the performance to not betray that, I think, was great. Like, to keep it ambiguous in the way that they did, I thought was good. Like,
it is, it's such a magic trick to fuck everything up as much as this and then end the episode, because you know that they're going to have to dig themselves out of this hole next episode.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like Louis C.K. does that with stand-up sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's always fun to watch. Just like you, this episode ends and the worst thing in the world, short of Picard as a Borg, has happened.
Yeah.
He's a Borg. Oh no! Picard's a Borg.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it as well, Adam. Do you want to move on to messages of the first priority, unlike the code that Jellicoe is transmitting to Admiral Nechayev?
Open a secure channel to Admiral Nechayev. Priority 2, put it through to my ready room, sir.
Yeah, hey, Admiral, why don't you elevate that up to priority 1? I think everyone would understand if this is a priority 1 message to check the status of the secret mission.
Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we've got a couple of P1s here. The first is from Lieutenant HBC and Crewman Landers to the Jester Fergusons. Oh, we've heard from these folks before, right?
Yeah.
Here's the message. Please be advised that Lieutenant HBC, she who is my wife, will be adding a new cadet to the duty roster in October. The finest crew in Portland looks forward to serving with the girl. Wow. Is that our first baby announcement, Priority One?
God, you know, at the risk of insulting someone who may have P1'd this before, I think it is.
It's one of a very few at the very least, which is those are always touching.
Wow. Congratulations, guys.
Yeah. Big congrats. Hopefully we'll be back in Portland sometime soon to do another live show, huh?
Look, Ben, I think you and I are of the same mind on this. We are interested in growing our viewership. By any means necessary, both by marketing, by touring, and by actual reproduction.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So thanks for the help, guys.
That's the way we're gonna do it, Adam.
Ben, second priority one message is from Pam Xander Pamilton of the Clan Pan. It is for Travunculus Triacle Trev Trevels of the Utmost Dimension. I feel like these are exercises I should do before we record a show. Like,
yeah. Red leather, yellow leather.
Elasticize my pronunciation. The message goes like this. You are my curmudgeonly heartstring. My raw... God. I evidently needed more linguistic training before reading this.
The tip of the tongue, the teeth, and the lips.
Lion face. Lemon face. You are my curmudgeonly heartstring, my walrus that barks at midnight. Your hipster seawalls have crumbled under my oceany blast of dorkitude. Inevitable and likely glorious for you. Your birthday adulation is well received, Trevels, and shall continue. Next, admit what a flaming piece of shit Gravity is. Seriously, fuck that movie. Love, Pam. Gravity was not a piece of shit. Look, I think Pam is great. I enjoy saying Pam's name in the way that I've been instructed to. However,
yes,
I did enjoy Gravity.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah. Yeah, that
those long takes.
That re-entry scene. Ooh.
Ooh, mama.
The crawl out of the swamp, like primordial human.
Spoiler alert.
That was great. That was great. Look, we can agree on a lot of things, Pam. Mostly, how majestic the oceany blast of dorkitude can be. But one place that we do disagree muchly about is the relative quality of the movie Gravity.
I don't know that I've seen a Cuaron that I didn't think was great.
That's what I'm saying, man. I ride for Cuaron big time.
Love those long takes. Love them.
Yeah. Well, one thing we love as much as a long take...
Wait a second.
It's a long P1.
I thought you were wrapping up the show, buddy.
No. I would never. Those who wish to see how long they can stretch our takes can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and submit a personal long take or a commercial long take. Personal messages are $100. Commercial messages are $200, and they help with the ongoing production of our program. Thanks, guys.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation, or you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that. Being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform. Or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
I did, Ben. You know, there's a certain spirit about drunk Shimodas where they are often the ones who are having the most fun in a scene. And mm-hmm. And to me, like, no one inhabits that feeling more than Ronnie Cox. Like, the times when I feel the most envy for actors on the show are when an actor parachutes in to an episode and they just take it over. They like box out everyone else and they've like, I've got this. And Ronnie Cox is that guy. And it's got to be such a great treat for an actor to be like, this is a show that's 6 seasons in and I have a chance to like flip everything upside down and be the captain of the Enterprise. Like,
they
are
made
you
me
fucking
a peanut
kidding?
Butter and banana sandwich and I'm going to eat that shit up.
Yeah. And he goes all the way on Jellicoe, like no half measures. He is amazing. You can't take your eyes off of him. Like he is all the way at 11 on his character. And that seems like the most fun thing to do if you're an actor. He clearly looks like he's having a blast. He is an atrocity as a captain in many ways, but like I love him. I ride for Jellicoe for sure. So he's my drunk Shimoda.
Nice.
How about you, Ben? I'm so used to this flipping format. I wasn't sure what to do there.
My Shimoda is Worf. We didn't really deal with this scene much in our little review, but there is a scene where they're in kind of another B-minus Star Wars cantina and they arrange for transport with some Ferengi who is delivering shit to this Cardassian planet. And the way they do it is like Picard kind of goes and gives a square business proposition to the Ferengi. And this is like a guy who he's like the guy that will take it to the guy. He's not the captain that they're of the ship they're trying to get on. He's just a go-between.
Yeah.
Picard fails to book this. Beverly then puts on her womanly charm and breathily and touchily implores this Ferengi to do what they're asking him to do.
I would be very, very
yes.
grateful.
Really, like, just put some potting mix in that terracotta and digs a little hole with her finger and climbs in.
They cut back to Picard sitting at the table and you just hear a from underneath it.
Yeah,
Picard's got to be liking this.
But You also, in that shot, have Worf standing just over his right shoulder. And Worf just looks so disgusted.
Yeah.
Like, Michael Dorn said volumes in the way he portrayed Worf in this scene. And, like, I don't think Worf has any lines in the scene, necessarily.
Yeah.
Or very few. But Worf definitely has strong feelings about the potted plant situation that's taking place. And I feel like he is reacting to the writer's room as much as anything. So Worf got my Shimoda for this episode.
Yeah, I don't feel like a warrior does this, you know? Like, a warrior is unfamiliar with this sort of coercion.
No, not into it. It too much exploits the like, you know, and like, come on, Ferengis are too easy to manipulate. Like, if they're going to be an interesting adversary and all you have to do is unzip your uniform a little bit and get a breathy voice going, like, not scary anymore.
I love a cantina scene, and they clearly have the set for it. I want to go back here all the time. You bring up a great point about does it always have to be a Ferengi? Like, there was an opera house alien in this scene. Like, why not use him? Let's use a different alien.
Let's use a different alien.
Nope. Hey, Ben, do we ever finish this two-parter? What's coming up in the next episode?
Next episode is season 6, episode 11, Chain of Command, part 2.
So we're not going to get a Ronnie Cox part 2?
Well, under the command of an unfeeling new captain, the Enterprise attempts to rescue Picard from the Cardassians. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I remember 4 episodes.
I believe there were 5.
Oh, yeah.
It's a longer arc than I think you're remembering.
Yeah. Yeah, the exciting conclusion.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. It's been a long time since I've seen either of these episodes, so I'm excited to dig back in.
Me too. Well, that will be our next one. In the meantime, we've got lots of ways that you can connect with us and other viewers of the show. You can use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter. Adam is at CutForTime. I'm at Benjamin R, AHR. I keep dropping my pen, man. You can go on Facebook. There's a great Facebook Greatest Gen group. There's a great subreddit. Those are lively and fun communities, not full of assholes.
Yeah.
Unlike all other online things.
Yeah. Surprisingly asshole free.
Yeah. Somebody on the Facebook had like a post like trying to decode why it was so asshole free. And I was like, man, I wish I knew why this was so asshole free. I don't know that we deserve it, but it's really delightful.
There is a secret Facebook group just of Maximum Fun hosts and producers. And one of the recent questions or topics brought up was like, oh, guys, how do you even deal with this Facebook thing? Like, it's just a fucking riot of fists and fur. And like, how many moderators do you get? Like, you need like 20 moderators, right? And I read this thread and I was like, wow, we are really lucky.
I started to type a response and it was like, this is just going to either come off as braggy or I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, exactly. No,
I have nothing to contribute.
I stayed out of that too for the same reason.
We didn't do anything to engender that. That's all you guys, and you guys are great.
Yeah.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for a lot of the other great music you hear on the show. And with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that will be 4 hours long!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.